corporate reports for decision as the next item. Oh, we did. Did you pick up the vote on that? Should we take the vote again? Not all councillors off-site could hear me on that. We were just adopting the minutes of the review and selection committee. It was moved, Councillor Telfer, seconded, Councillor Fry. Oh, take the vote again. All those in favour, raise your hand. Thank you. That is unanimous. Now, naming of Woodend Path. Would the ward councillor, Minister Spears, like to? Community school. Councillor Duncan.
Would agree to what's been written as recommended. I agree with that the school should be have input into naming the path and under the direction of David Spears, but the decision is made to council.
Very good. Is that seconded, Councillor Schilling? No other debate. Get all those in favour. Raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. The gap year program. So you see the recommendation is, apart from funding, there is a new development to expand the range of schools from which GAP students are drawn. So I've included that in correspondence, but members may have it what you will. Would anyone like to move a motion? That's the whole thing. I'll come back to Councillor Gard for seconding. Councillor Hull.
In order to appropriately move this, should there be a national figure in the funding?
I'll ask staff for advice.
Right. The youth achievement grant, there's a clear increase, and that's understandable. This one, I can't see any figures.
Through the chair, I'm sorry, I don't know the number on that. But it's about $30,000 per gap year student.
So since the financial implications will remain unchanged for the gap year program, the 3 years being $265,915.
Right, that's two people for 3 years. So the number of students is not changed according to the recommendation. It's just the pool is expanding, the catchment.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll continue with the same funding.
It's in line with the EB agreement, so it can go up a little bit each year.
Yeah, it's in the report. Well, Mr. Scull, if you're happy for that to go ahead without dollars attached, it is in the report, but it's not in the recommendations.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're carrying on the original budget that we put forward to council.
We understand that, but as long as you're happy to have recommendations that don't have dollar figures, we have become accustomed to including them.
Through the chair, would you like to put the 265 for 3 years?
Let's do that, if we can include in brackets subject to enterprise agreement increases. I don't know where they fit into the EA, but anyway. So endorses funding of that dollar figure, bracket subject to enterprise agreement increases. Is that being minuted? So you're moving that one?
Yeah, I'm happy with this. This is one of Mr. Scull's initiatives he thought the council had. And we've seen it in operation now for a few years. And I hope we'll get this here from the students again at some time, just to keep pace with their experiences. But I can only imagine that this could be quite an impressionable period of their pre-working on and set themselves up to succeed and have an enduring impact on them as individuals. So I think it's great.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Gard?
Now I'm muted. Thank you, Worship. I don't think any of us need any convincing as to the worth of the development of our young people in our society. This is just one of the best things we do. And I was about to say, I think pretty much the same as Councillor Hull, in that it would be great to hear one or two of the graduates from the system come back and address us as to how important the gap year ended up being as to their admission to the workforce and the areas of significance to them, because that could easily be of help for us, you know, as we tune it in the future. But yeah, a great exercise.
Now, I'm just asking Ms. McKenzie to try and find 15 minutes in a forum when a chiropractor gets towards the end of their year and meet us and tell us how they've gone. That'd be good. Any opposition? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? And that's carried unanimously. Thank you. The youth achievement grants. 7.5. Councillor Pryor, if you wish to speak. Seconded, Councillor Mason. Anyone opposing? I put the motion. All those in favour? Raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. The draft state government waste and food strategy is very comprehensive paper prepared by staff, which seems in order. In fact, we should probably be writing the state policy, because obviously so much expertise in the organisation. Anyone like to move and endorse the submission? Councillor Crossan. Councillor Cross, you mentioned.
Well, as you mentioned, very good report. It's something for
Councillor Hull, seconding.
Yeah.
Is that a question?
Oh, that's a question.
Just come back. I'll come back to you, Councillor Hull. Councillor
Hull, I've got a couple of questions as well. They're very specific questions. Waste to energy. And it can be taken on notes. What is Marion's contribution to waste to energy? In other words, incinerator.
Well, that's
you take on that. That's
any other questions?
And compostable bags. Are we still charging residents for compostable bags? I don't believe they come through the chair. I believe they come in and collect them.
We do charge them a phenomenal sum because they are optional, so you don't need to use the bags. You can use the bins successfully without them. So if people elect to use the bags, we do charge, I think it's $4.50
for 6 months.
Can I indicate to the council that I know how it's played, don't you? In the report, page 176, it talks about the government subsidising these bags. Why are we actually skimming money? The size of these bags and directly got the opportunity to actually have them funded by the state government.
I'm not sure it's accurate to say that we're skimming money. That suggests something illicit. Well, Mr. Skoll, do you have an answer to that? Is it possible that state government pays for these? Or
through your worship, my understanding is that there's a subsidy for this really green industry. It doesn't cover the full cost to us of those bags, and I'm afraid we don't make money out of this. It's the cost of the bags, and that seems not supply as well. That.
Any other questions, Councillor?
Oh, well, obviously, on that note, the cost of the bags. It's an earnest question in regards to encouraging people to compost more, and if we could actually take away that cost of the compostable bag, because some people don't like having a dirty container, they just want to pull the bag out and put it in the green waste bin. We should be facilitating that, just like whole bus traders. So if maybe the administration puts that as a question on notice, and, you know, during the meeting, they come back to us with the consequences of that. That would be good.
And just for our information, Councillor Holt, do you believe that $9 a year would be a disincentive if you use the bags and bins?
Well, it depends how much the compost could be more than that or less.
Thank you. Were you seconding the motion? Yep. Councillor Price, a question?
This is a really comprehensive look at waste strategy reports. I'm actually quite impressed with the documentation. The one thing it misses for me, I don't know whether we can add it in something that's kind of impressive, but can add some risk. The kind of the best way for us to deal with waste is not created in the first place. And so, like, I understand that maybe it doesn't fit in here because this isn't waste strategy. This is what you do with the waste once it's become waste. But I mean, I think there's an angle where you can encourage the state government and maybe some of the other bodies to not create waste in the first place by mandating different ways to do something we do currently. I don't know whether we can put a statement in our response about that. We prefer not to make the waste in the first place. That's the obvious solution. And then all these strategies are built on some labor.
So I have heard the cynical point of view that some of the plastics manufacturers strongly promote recycling because it diverts attention away from the fact that they create so much unnecessary packaging.
Yes.
However, it's not going to be easy to incorporate that tonight into the paper. Can I just check with staff what the time frame is for submission? Lines, do you have that? I appreciate the effort of rostering. I just don't know if it's a deadline, but I actually can't see it in the
Friday
24,
always at
5 p.m. Oh, thank you. Very sharp eyes,
thank you. Thursday 7th.
So, I think we could, if we could trust it to staff to incorporate a comment along those lines. Mr. Lyons, do you have the concept clearly enough?
Very happy with the concept.
Yeah,
you could either add that as a line to the motion, or you could leave that with me. I'd like to chat with Councillor Fryer.
Well, unfortunately, our cumbersome process, you know, says that we're endorsing a black and white document. But would the mover and the seconder be happy to incorporate an addition written at staff's discretion to capture that point that the strategy should be extended to minimise the creation of products which would create waste in the first place?
I'm happy with that.
Councillor Hull, would you be happy to incorporate something like that? So, if we could amend the motion by adding the third paragraph. Endorses a staff addition to the submission to the effect that the waste strategy should discourage excessive manufactured products which will ultimately become waste products.
That's just a bit
of a truce. These are products, the creation of cycles, the creation of products.
Like
the packaging, which ultimately become
waste products. Maybe we put the consumer before the first products. Just makes it a bit more sense.
Okay, so
and at the first part, endorses an addition by staff to the submission. And to the effect. Perfect. Councillor Poirot, are you happy? And Liberal Section happy? Yes, sir. Let's go and hear it. So that's the motion which I believe the movement seconder have adopted. Councillor Lesk, you had a question?
Yeah, just further on to the compostable bags. If the plastic bags for produce are replaced by compostable bags, doesn't that take the need away for the provision of bags as much for residents? I know that one of the IGAs or Drakes actually has them for fruit and veg in the Glenelg area. So yeah, just that's just my question. May take some of the demand off us locally.
Any comment from staff? Did you get the question, Mr. Lyons?
To be honest,
no.
I didn't get the whole
councillor. Oh, you've got a question, Mr. Scott?
The councillor, the chair, the Foodland supermarket at Brighton is the one to which Councillor Blescu refers, and their bags that you put your fruit and veg in are all compostable, and people use that for the green bins, and that actually means that Old Flash Bay Council doesn't need to provide any bags because people go shopping and use them. I think that
answers
your question, Councillor.
Yeah. All right. Good awareness in that. So there being no other opposition or question, to put that vote, all those in favour, raise your hand. Then that's carried unanimously. Thank you. That gets us well through the agenda. There's probably a couple that we could move on block here because we're getting a bit bogged down. The asset management plan and the asset management plan for community consultation, that's a different one. And the update to delegations. They could probably all be taken together. So on pages 216, 253, and 381. That's what I would suggest. Move on block, Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Mason. Now, people can ask any questions about any of those asset management plans or indeed the delegations, but I hope everyone remembers that the delegations are basically so that we don't have to decide 200,000 things during the year, but it's delegated through the Chief Executive and onto staff for those operational matters. Councillor Tilton, any question?
Yes, in the asset management plan, we've got the report, but how do we get a sense of the quality of what's being done and the gaps? I'm struggling to get in my mind what the whole asset management, you know, it's nice to have nice graphs and the pretty colours and all of that and the risk and all of that, but, you know, what have we got to and what do we need to do? And I know I've talked about improvement, but, yeah, I really am struggling to get a handle on the whole asset management plan and how we do it, given that's so important.
I would say it is indeed much more quantitative than qualitative, but Mr. Scull, do you want to comment? Maybe Mr. Lyons, although it covers all of the areas, to be honest. Mr. Scull, what do you think?
I would suggest through the chair that every asset plan has an improvement plan for that asset plan, but it also talks about the condition rating of the assets, and that's what we use to actually put into our long-term financial plan. And to plan for the renewal of assets and the upkeep. I probably would ask Mr. Lyons if we could add anything more to that. But the question, Mr. Lyons, is what does the asset plan give us and how do we use it?
There will be 8 plans, and this, of course, is the first one that's gone out to community consultation, had the consultation feedback, and is coming back for adoption.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt Mr. Lyons. Can the off-site councillors hear the response? No. Mr. Lyons, can you come up to the chair around the horseshoe? That might help. Thanks.
Thank you. Good timing. So I'll start that response again, and the question, Mr. Allen, is a little overview of the asset management plans and what they do for us.
Not really. No.
My question was how do we get a feel for the level, quality and need in this report? I guess as a usable tool of elected members, how do we get a handle on this and how can we use it particularly to do with the quality of whatever. I know it tells us there are these numbers and so on, but how do we own that as elected members?
Yeah, Tristan, and I was making a comment to sort of assist with the question that there's a huge amount in the plans for quantitative checking, but there's not a lot of discussion about quality as such. So, in that context, how do elected members use these plans to get some numbers and look on time?
So, Chair, maybe I might start and then I'll ask Mr. Allen to contribute. He's been the SLT that's looked after the preparation of or been responsible for the plans. They are strategic plans. I think the first comment I'd make is that each of them results in a funding requirement, an expenditure requirement. And so they'll be impacting our long-term financial plans, which is ultimately owned by the members as well. We're not expecting any surprises at this stage. We believe that everything that's within these plans is covered in the long-term financial plan. But Ray, at the end of the year, Mr. Barnwell, will be consolidating all of the expenditure and make sure that it goes into the annual business process. And you'll have complete transparency through that. And then if we look at the fleet run, which is the first, there are a lot of numbers and details in there, but essentially it will look at the way that we procure, the type of fleet that we procure, and the best outcomes for the city. I think it's fair to say that if we move beyond the fleet, there'll be a lot of information and areas that impact in local wards as well. The coastal is a classic example. And maybe one thing we could do to help councillors is allocate ward-specific concepts and pick them up at ward briefings and engage you through that and let you know and keep you informed about how we're rolling them out.
Perhaps I can follow up a bit more. When I look on page 219, before you even get to the asset management plan, it talks about levels of service, for example, and to an extent future demands. Now, how do staff know what levels of service that community or elected members would be happy with?
So we've been informed on levels of service by the satisfaction and performance surveys that we sent out last year. So every single one of the asset management plans refers to the community feedback we got through there.
All right, thank you. Anything to add, Mr.
Graham? Just these documents provide council with assurance that there's enough funding to maintain or renew our assets at adequate levels. I think that's probably a key message. I'll just like that.
So it's more about the numbers, but I suppose as we hear from the community along the way, that could be feedback about the quality or the level of service, and that's a circular process to keep feeding that in. Councillor Holm.
I'm going to follow along Raylene's track. In terms of how can we as elected members use this as a tool. And I want to drill down on what Matt said about funding. Would that mean that asset management, renewal, replacement, repair will be automatically factored into budgets going forward? You know, we won't have surprises like, oh, the air conditioning on this building is, well, I could put them there's no budget for it. So what do we do? I want to avoid those situations. So is that what we're talking about? Is that the degree of a strategy that this plan will bring to us?
So through the chair, Appendix A to each of the asset management plan identifies the operations renewal replacement costs. That then informs the long-term financial plan. So from the long-term financial plan, that informs our annual business planning process.
So
the how sort of links together.
So we won't have a situation where the air conditioning at Hellcat Library is, you know, expired and unexpected things can happen, but you know, we're talking about, you know, genuine end of life situation. So we won't have those sort of surprises.
So through the chair, I'm very confident with the asset management plans that we're presenting tonight that we won't have those surprises. There are some aspects of some of the asset classes, for example, outdoors. So we don't have a great understanding of exactly when they will come to the end of their life. So we've identified any improvement plans that we need to take more analysis from the boards, for example. So it's not in its entirety, but we've identified where we need to make improvements.
You've got one other question.
It's more educated guesswork than we've ever had before.
I'm happy to accept that as long as it's not too vague and there's a genuine attempt. Why did we go out to the community to advise us about what D9 bulldozers we buy or what lawnmowers we buy? I've never seen that happen before. And what would we gain from that? Like, going by the report, we didn't get many responses, if any. So is that an obligation of local government to go out and consult about whether you're going to buy a Hino truck or a Volvo? What was that all about?
I think Bruce McKenzie might be best placed to answer that one.
Through the chair, I believe it's part of the legislative process. So as part of the requirement under the Act, you have to consult on your asset management plan.
So we have an obligation to.
And it's pretty impressive, 80% approval.
Four out of five, but you know, it's a big number of the percentage. Mr. Scott, did you want to add something?
I was just going to say through the chair, we're not asking the residents, you know, what type of truck do we buy, but we're asking mostly about level of service. So we need to have your imprimatur, if you like, to buy the things that we need and maintain them to the satisfactory standards, so we can deliver to do the job that you expect of us. So it's levels of service.
If staff are going to take anything out of that question, which is a good question, it is that we still haven't got the hang of effective consultation. So when we're consulting on the asset management plan, we say, there's the plan, what do you think? Rather than asking questions which are digestible and meaningful to the recipient, so that they can give meaningful responses rather than 4 ticks out of 5. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. Mine's more of a picky thing, and it may be personal. I'm not keen on the way, and I'll give you a page number for the first one. So page 269, which is part of the transport asset management plan. I'm just not keen on some of the tables and the graphics, particularly the tables where we've got columns with nothing in for the whole 10 years, and we've got other columns with the same amount in. I think we could present that much better to the public and for ease of reading with the headline figures of what we'll spend over the next 10 years. 49 million spent over the next 10 years forecast, which will be renewal, maintenance and monitoring. Creation zero for 10 years, operation of the asset is zero, nothing in columns, and they're repeated all the way through the transport. And the same with those graphs. We've got lots of different colours and then a graph with one colour all the way through, except for a tiny little line, which I can't actually tell which colour that's supposed to be anyway. So just those two bits together, I think could be solved better.
Councillor Crossland. Are you happy if staff just take that on board for the future.
Yeah, it's what I just wondered one of them and just thought, is what I think is necessary. But
yeah, I mean, I think you'll find that graphs and colours are generally popular, but when you have columns with a whole list of zeros,
or exactly
some people number. Might think that's unnecessary, but I guess it's to be read as a whole. Breaking out of standing orders for a moment, any other quick comments from members on that? Councillor Gard and Councillor Valescu?
Muted.
Councillor Gard. Need to unmute.
Keith.
Unmute. Yep, that's it. No? Getting close? Gard, here
oh dear, old dogs, new tricks. I had a question on the schedule of delegations, if that's part of this on-block motion, Your Worship.
Can I come back to you on delegations?
Yep.
Because I just want to cover the point. The document that's going out to consultation, Councillor Crossland's raised a point about some of the graphs and some of the presentations. For the benefit of the staff, at least for future iterations, is there any comment specifically on that? Councillor Valescu, anything on that?
Mine wasn't about the delegations. Mine was more in regards to the asset management plan. So shall I wait or comment?
Well, I'm not hearing any other comments, so staff can simply take that on board, and certainly it would be a good idea for, I don't know whether it's Ms. Pearson's team or Mr. Clark's team, should have a look at this, or anything like that that's going up for consultation, I expect. But they can take that on board. So asset management plan, still asking questions about that. Councillor Valescu.
Thanks, Your Worship. What I wanted to know is, are we looking at how our assets interact with each other? The first thing that comes to mind is the fleet assets and our street trees, and how I guess the recent changes in providers has pointed out that there's, you know, the larger trucks are causing issues for our street trees. And I guess also, like, do we need to maintain street trees to allow for the street sweepers and things like that? So I think that's something we need to look into and maybe explore that option more. I guess the other thing is just some of these things on page 233, we're talking about the environment. I would rather we look at the responses to the issues caused by climate change as opposed to gestures. So if we had $1 million extra that we're spending, I'd rather we actually spend to fix the problems than get a fleet of one or two hydrogen powered vehicles so we can sort of pat ourselves on the back that we're being environmental. I think those things will come. But yeah, that's sort of my comment on that. And just, I guess, looking to promote, I guess, group buys with other councils, and also looking at sharing equipment as well. And articulate what we're doing and what we can do. And also, I guess, if there's been any unwillingness from any of our neighbours to participate in this to save us and them money, the community should know about that too.
A couple of questions there which staff might want to comment upon. What about this business of trucks and street trees? Has that come up as an issue on the radar for staff? Who would like to respond?
I'll pick up a couple of lines. That's a great question, a great observation from a councillor. We did have an issue with the new waste contractors that got hire trucks and they were hitting our trees. And that came down to a driver education. So the drivers have been historically driving a set offset from the curb, and now they've got hire trucks, they were hitting the tree branches, so we needed to educate them to move out a little bit more. So that's been addressed at an operational level. But those sorts of things are great questions and things we take into account. Could I move on to a couple of the others, the councillor?
Yes. is there tokenism?
The group buying. Sorry?
Group buying, yes.
Group buying. We now have an arrangement with our collaborative partners in the City of Charles Sturt and Port Adelaide Infill. We're starting off with utilities, meaning utes, and we're doing group purchases with all of them, and we're exploring that for other areas as well. So where we can, we will. Third one was...
The question is it tokenism to hydrogen vehicles and so forth?
I don't think that Mr. Allen and I would hand on our hearts say whether we'll end up buying our first truck being a hydrogen or an electric vehicle, but it will be one of them. That's where the industry is going. We've already had a business case last year where we looked at it, might be earlier this year, where we looked at it with Port Adelaide Infill, and we actually made the decision not to. It wasn't worth it. But we will be buying our first one in the next couple of years.
Right. So that is good to know that there's a serious business case being looked at either way. Now, if there's nothing else on asset management plans, I'll go to Councillor Gard, has a question about delegations. You might want to give us the page number, Councillor Gard.
Yeah, refer to page 396.
396.
And that's involving the cooperation with other councils.
Yes.
As we read, the health department has the option of acquisitioning, you could probably say, the assistance of councils in various situations. We have an interesting one at the moment, of course. And it would be very interesting to see how this was working in Melbourne, because it is sort of municipality based. But my main question is, even though that is there as a point of delegation that can be made, are all councils, certainly our neighbouring ones that might be most likely to cooperate with us, but it could be councils at large that need to cooperate, are they all on the same page as far as the processes are concerned? In other words, where there is reference in a delegation to a certain exercise, is everybody on the same page in that process? That's my concern.
I think a lot of this comes from pro forma templates from the LGA. Perhaps Ms. McKenzie might be the best person to answer that.
Through the chair, the mayor's correct. So the delegations templates are produced by the Local Government Association for all councils, and they're sent out to all councils to obviously then adopt. They come with a recommendation of what should be delegated. However, it's up to each individual council to decide on what their delegated powers are. With this one, when you actually read it, it says in performing the council's functions or exercising the council's power under the Act. I mean, I think these things anyway would happen probably regardless of whether the delegation was there or not when you actually read it in a bit of detail.
Yes, we don't want councillors walking into takeaways and putting bans on people. All right. Does that help, Councillor Garn?
Yes, I guess putting the question another very brief way, is our CEO satisfied with the situation as he understands it, apropos of the alignment, let's say, of delegations from council to council?
Very well, Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Chair. This list of delegations refers to public health and emergency situations, fire, etc. And in answer to your question, I think the question is, are other councils happy to collaborate? And in these circumstances, overwhelmingly, yes. In some circumstances, the answer is not always that case. And so collaboration depends what you're collaborating on. The takers are upper of collaborations in some other areas are harder to get than it would be for something like health and emergency.
And I can add that it wasn't long ago that the LGA and officers across numerous councils were discussing cooperation in respect of the bushfires.
Yeah.
And there was a massive amount of cooperation. So lots of sharing of information, staff working in other council areas, etc. So there are certainly some healthy signs there.
Thanks.
I've actually seen that firsthand.
Councillor, I've seen that firsthand.
South Australia is really leading the way in the nation. New South Wales is not nowhere near as close to that collaboration, unfortunately. And depending on which council or shire you're in, things work better than others. But there seemed to be no organised cohesion with local government.
Very good. If there's no other comment, it's been moved and seconded. Those three reports, draft, fleet, etc., plan for endorsement, another asset management plan for consultation, and the delegations update. I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we'll go to page 244, the LG Finance Authority Annual General Meeting. So this had to be called out because there's a nomination of a particular council representative. It's customarily the mayor. I think you've already nominated the mayor to be the representative of the AGM of the LGA, which happens immediately afterwards. So it is kind of convenient. So if somebody wants to move and put in anyone they wish to be the council rep. Councillor Velescu's. Are you moving that way, Councillor?
I'm happy to move the mayor be the representative, seeing as it's easier. I'm not aware of anyone else indicating any interest at this point, but I'll start with that.
Sorry, just before you proceed, I'll just ask if any of the councillors, and we do have everyone present tonight, which is great, whether anyone is seeking to be considered as a member of the LGFA board. Very hotly contested positions indeed. If not, then Councillor Velescu, you might move clauses 1, 2, and 3. 3 can come out. We don't have any motion suggested. The LGFA, so it is just 1 and 2, but I just have to check that. So, Councillor, did you wish to add anything to your?
No, that's fine.
Seconded, Councillor Masika, thank you. Anything to add?
No.
Again, there's no opposition. I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. So now we jump again and we look to 429. Whether there are any nominations for GAROC. I can just ask for a start whether anybody has put up their hand for this higher glory. If not, then...
Did you want to be nominated, Your Worship?
No, I'm far too humble for such a
game.
Thank you, Councillor Schilling. It's really just Councillor, clause 1 is all that's required. We just want to know the report. Very straightforward. Councillor Telfer, seconded. Councillor Mason, thank you. All those in favour, carried unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, especially that those councillors offline who are. I know there are various corporate reports for noting, but I just want to take the leases and licences first, because I know that sometimes members do have questions about that. On page 440, someone would like to move accordingly? Councillor Masika?
Yeah,
Councillor Crestor. Crossland.
My question is, I don't know how this lines up with the Finance and Audit Committee, but we were notified that there are 16 premises with no, on a different licensed or lease to all the others, and I've asked for a list of those. I thought they might be in this report, but again, I'm not sure which those premises are.
I suppose I'll ask Ms. Bialtonetti to comment, but it does seem this report is more about addressing that issue of Gretchen trying to get all of our tenants on formal leases or licences, which has obviously been a challenge for the last few years. But the question is a good one, and Ms. Bialtonetti, would you like to respond to that?
Thank you for the question, through the Chair. A number of the leases that refer to the 16 are legacy leases that have been in place for a number of years and are long-term leases, so the transition to the new policy will take time at the conclusion of those leases, but some of the leases include Milton Wills, Derby Gardens, Dogs, so they're ones that previously have been agreed to and entered into.
My other question is,
so just check, Councillor Crossland, would you like that
I'd still like the list.
Question on notice,
yes,
or just to have it emailed to you?
I tried emailing, so I'll put it as a question.
All right, take that as a question on notice. List of 16.
The other question I've got for staff, if I may, Your Worship, is, and I don't know if other people have experienced it, but when you try and get access to a lease or a licence to find out if the group are doing the right thing, we're very often blocked. It's very difficult to get hold of licences, and when I've asked club members or chairs of clubs, they haven't got a copy of it either, or I'm sure. So then you go to the manager of the facility and they haven't got a copy, and it's very difficult to know if people are doing the right thing when no one can see it. So I just wondered whether it would be possible to have some form of register on the extranet that we can actually access the current licences or see exactly where we're up to. But I'm sure someone must have access to it, or it must be available somewhere. I just wonder why it's so difficult.
Yeah, the obvious thing would be an email to Ms. Bialtonetti or to Mr. Harris or Mr. Skull. But if that doesn't work, I don't really see anything in principle wrong with the idea of having all of the leases on the extranet. I'm not sure how many members would want to trawl through them, but as you say, it might be a particular club that you're researching. So who's going to respond to that from staff? Ms. Bialtonetti, do you want to go?
Thank you for the Chair. I guess in terms of that, and I acknowledge that obviously in the past there have been some challenges. Moving forward, what we are trying to do is we are trying to have a consistent approach with our portfolio through establishing standard templates. So happy to share that with the and have on the extranet. In terms of specific details, in terms of the conditions and clauses, they're obviously very different depending on which side it is. Happy to work with the elected members, work through. I'd have to take that on notice to work through how we would be able to do that. I don't see that would be an issue on the internet for the elected members.
Yeah, just PDF documents. Yeah. Okay, I'll send an email. Thank you.
All right. So, and those in positions, governments be ultimately might look at that as well. Councillor Holst, a question.
Yep. It won't be a question that's unfamiliar with the staff member, but in terms of insurance for our list facilities, in taking the question on notice that don't have to answer tonight, but I think it's important we formalise the question. Does the organisation ask for certificates of currency at appropriate times? In other words, expiry date, you know, to make sure that buildings are insured for all the aspects of insurance, because it's not just the building, it's public liability and so on. And also, equally, the sum insured. Are they actually insuring to the degree that they should be insured?
So
let's get an answer on that. I'm pretty confident the theory is yes, but in the past the practice may not have been so. But Ms. Bealton, any point can you tell us?
Thank you for the question. And through the chair, yes, the theory is that we are following up the public liability information we obtained as competitive currencies with the respective leaseholders. In terms of the adequate level of, adequate level of insurance, that is another element that we need to look at. Predominantly for a lot of our clubs, it's predominantly around public liability. So that is, and that was part of the finding in the lease and licensing collaborative order, was determining what the required public liability amounts were, because some clubs are smaller, may not necessarily need the $20 million. So that was an action that management agreed to looking into and trying to define that and to support our clubs essentially, because some clubs obviously are smaller clubs, they may not need a $20 million versus a larger club, there's a lot more interaction on the site and a lot more membership as well.
Very good. And I can just add some good news to that, that I was informed by Mr. Skull today that the two vacant positions in the land and property team have been filled, with one of them been vacant for more than a year, and no doubt that should help us get up to date with all of these leases and chasing up those annual items of information which the lessees or licensees are required to give to council. Councillor Telfer.
What is council's tactic with those community groups to move them along to entering into the licenses or leases of which they are in denial?
What do we do with the recalcitrants? Don't give too many trade secrets away, but there must be some strategy.
Through the chair, thank you for the question. I guess that one there, there are a number of licensees that are currently challenged by the new policy, and and we are trying to work with them. I guess I'm keen for the unit manager, when they come on board, to really have that conversation with them. We also want to try and elevate that, and part of a proposal that I put forward was at the relevant ward briefings, we would have actually a status update on the leases and licences relevant to the respective wards, and I would like that as an opportunity to flag it with the ward councillors as well, and see if we can have a collaborative approach to try and address certain club members of certain clubs that are really not keen to go on to the councils. There are, onto the new policy, there are other ways to meet it, but I guess that's probably something that's more of an operational detail approach.
Well, the aspect of it that gets beyond operational detail is when it comes to the crunch. And what I mean by that is, this particular council of elected members has been pretty keen on the principle that there are consequences for bad behaviour or negligence. And indeed, we've actually worn some hot water of some strife because we've taken that attitude. And so if there are council tenants that say, well, we're not going to sign anything, you can't do anything, you're not going to do anything to us, there have to be consequences. And that's what I think that question probably leads to, even if it wasn't immediately intended, and that's getting beyond operational. That's administration coming up with a plan to be endorsed by council for action to be taken against tenants that won't cooperate.
Yes.
Any other questions or a comment from Mr. Greaves?
Thank you, through the chair. I thought it's just worthwhile to add for the information of the chamber that there is also some look now at the retail and commercial leases. Is that through the LGA and some of the operational requirements there? So there's some consultation open for the 28th of August. This is coming through the Small Business Commissioner. And basically, that's going to give an opportunity. I think it goes a little bit to your question, Councillor Telfer, on some groups who are concerned that these documents seem to be linked to some retail commercial components, and we've got some legislative requirements there, but there's a little window here where we might be able to influence some change for effectively leases with community groups. So that's some work we'll keep you informed on, and that goes to the heart of some lengthy and technically difficult leases that some groups struggle to deal with and therefore struggle to get through and find it hard to come back to us in time on. I know we won't be the only council that will be engaging strongly with that to see if we can get some simpler approaches in how we engage, particularly with some of our smaller clubs and associations. And certainly the work that we will be looking to do there and members is exactly how we deal with those groups, including using the levers, as we've discussed here previously, around subsidy levels, etc., to help bring groups along and understand that those documents are there for their benefit and for ours, in terms of getting to site leases and licences.
Thank you. Well, it's a straightforward recommendation. Motion is basically just to make progress.
Just a quick question, one more question, Councillor. I view the subject very as a very important subject. Because if something happened in those clubs and somebody did file a claim,
your question?
In terms of everything said tonight about the subject, should it be part of the KPIs rather than just having this rolling on?
We're going to have a discussion about KPIs at some point, so please, why don't you bring that up then? Next week at the forum, in fact. Thank you. So you don't have to remember it for that one week. If there are no other questions, somebody might move the straightforward recommendation. Councillor Schilling, seconded by Councillor Duncan. Thank you. There's no further discussion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Rightio. The next three could be moved on block, so that is the work safety report, Corp and CEO KPI report, questions taken on notice, register being noted. So someone like to move those on block and then we'll take any questions. Councillor Duncan, moved, seconded by Councillor Lisicka. Any comment at this stage? Anyone have any questions? If not, I'll put the motion, all those in favour. Carried unanimously, thank you. So we're on to motions with notice, page 457.
Procedural motion, Your Worship.
Sorry, a procedural motion, Councillor Gillespie.
I'd like to move that the motion dealing with all the sites, unsightly sites, be dealt with before the one dealing with one specific site.
Councillor, you've got a motion. One step later in the, we've got three motions of notice. One's about GM, one's about the Scorpos garage, one's about other vacant sites. So you're suggesting that the Scorpos garage motion should come after the vacant sites motion?
Yep. Yeah, because it may become redundant depending on how the first motion, the other motion goes.
So it's not really debated. Is there a seconder? Councillor Telfer. And I'll simply put the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. That's carried, so we will proceed in that manner. So we still move the genetically modified, or still deal with the GM crops motion first on page 457. Now, I need to make a comment from the Chair because it can very easily be knocked in shape, but with respect, it's just not quite in order. Councillor Hull, if you want that first sort of factual preface, what I suggest that the word be acknowledge rather than acknowledging, because in effect, it is that council. Acknowledges maybe ES, etc., etc., and then the words I move are always redundant in this context because you are moving it as a matter of fact at the meeting, but the motion itself is framed in a way that council etc. So that council acknowledges and that the City of Marion undertakes, if you see what I mean. In fact, I move that the City of Marion doesn't need to be there if the words that council are at the beginning.
Happy.
So that will make more sense, I'm sure you will.
More than happy for all those changes.
And we don't want to lose the sense of it, so that should be good. Go ahead.
Members, I move this. Marion has a proud history of proposing genetically modified crops. I've been involved in at least two motions where we've indicated our disapproval of genetically modified crops being grown at Glenthorne Farm. And it was one of only three sites in South Australia, as I remember, that had trials of GM, and past councils took a good view of that. It was inconsistent of the state government's broader clean green image that they wanted to project for South Australia. So this is just a continuation of that. I can't see any good reason why we should destroy our clean and green name in South Australia. Kangaroo Island, oddly enough, has sought to actually isolate itself from this legislation. Leon Bignall has been a great supporter of that over there. Not sure the mayor would be a great supporter of AI, but nevertheless. And I think it's important for us to consult the community. Now, this is not about us, in this case, casting our opinion. It's consulting the community as per the legislation. Now, I take exception to comments in the officer's reports, and because we don't grow genetically modified crops, in some way we're disenfranchised from the process. But the legislation doesn't say that at all, neither does the letter from PIRSA. And it certainly does indicate that those people like Gilbert Honey, beekeepers who are based in Marina, should actually consult with the city of, the district council of wherever, to actually ensure that they don't grow genetically modified crops that might actually impact on their bees. That doesn't happen in the legislation or the letter from PIRSA at all. So I hope you can see through that the legislation and the letter from PIRSA does not support the officer's report. I want to make that quite clear, and I made that point quite clear to the staff well in advance of the council meeting.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Seeker.
With the North Island comment, you are.
Anyone speaking against?
Question.
Question, Councillor
Seeker. Just with regards to GM crops, is the legislation currently only on canola, and do we have any canola growers in the City of Marion?
We don't have any crops as such being grown. Of course, there was a GM test crop, but that has finished. So we don't have any crops as such that are GM, if that helps. Councillor Fancy.
Hello, sir. I've lost my voice a bit. I'd like to speak against the motion. The reason being is that consulting the community would take up a lot of resources, and it gives the community the impression that they have a say in this. Now, applications are not going to be accepted about whether or not our community is in favour or not in favour of genetically modified produce. It's actually only related to marketing and trade. So the only people that we would need to consult with, who I assume PIRSA has already, is actually growers in the community, which I think is just viticulture. So for that reason, I would vote against this.
And speaks in favour. Then the mover has a right reply.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Look, I think the community really do want to have a say on this. South Australia's had this view with the great Wetherill government. Jay Wetherill government led the way with this, Councillor Clancy, and I think that I think that he actually set us up to succeed in a climate that are looking continually for cleaner and greener crops. And as for only being canola, there is provisions in the Act to allow other crops.
So don't think it's just canola. And I think that this is part of the community appetite. They want to have a say. Why should they be disenfranchised by having a say on an issue like this about our image, what they consume, having a choice, having a say? And as for the amount of resources, well, the government would have actually anticipated this. It's part of their legislation. It was an offer, a gesture of the government, for a local government, and taking on board the important role that local government plays for us to consult our communities. They wouldn't have done it if they didn't think it was important. It is important. Otherwise, we wouldn't even have the opportunity. Purcell wouldn't have written to us if they didn't think it was important. And I know out there was a group of people that would love to have a say, whether and I'm open to whether that's a positive or negative view on genetically modified crops. And I don't think it's going to cost too much for us to actually use social media or put an ad in the paper or whatever. It's normal, and we owe it to the community to spend that sort of money, as indicated by the state government.
I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Because it's closed, I'll take the vote again. So I'll just ask for those in favour, please put your hands up. All those against, please put your hands up. The motion is defeated.
And a division, please, Mr.
Division is called. So I will go through the process again. Don't worry about standing up. So those who are in favour, please raise your hand. They are councillors Mason, Seeger, Hull and Gard. Those against, just raise your hand. They are councillors Clancy, Bolescu, Hutchinson, Cryer, Telfer, Schilling, Duncan and Crossland. Motion's defeated. So now we jump over to the vacant underutilised sites motion on page 490.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor.
Point of order.
Is it in order to change the order of business to try and present another motion?
That is disrespectful comment and won't be allowed. It is in order to move a procedural motion to vary the order of business, but majority of comments like that are out of order in themselves. So I reject the point of order. Councillor Bolescu, would you like to move?
A procedural motion,
Councillor Crossland.
I'd like to move that we suspend standing orders to give us the opportunity to collectively look at both these motions and discuss them informally first.
Move that we suspend. Second, Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by a majority. Chewing counts as a vote against. Councillor Crossland, do you want to kick it off? Any view? How do these two
Look together? Look, I support the basic notion in both of these resolutions, and I definitely would like to see what council can actually do to resolve them. Where I'm not 100% sure is whether it's just this one site, how many sites we've got, what council can actually do, is where I'm not sure about. So I just wanted to see others' opinions. And
that's a good question. And perhaps I could jump to Councillor Hull about something that he's trying to achieve with his motion. So there's a comment from staff, and we're just trying to find it. There's a suggestion a broader approach may yield better outcomes. I suppose what I'm asking Councillor Hull is, what is the specific enforcement beyond graffiti that you would wish to see occur at the school bus site?
Well, we're looking at major changes. Mr. Mayor, it's sat there for 4 years, gathering pigeons. And...
But what I think the tenor of, and sum up some of that information, it's an approved use. It's a petrol station that's there. It's not in use, but other than the fact it's a big petrol station, if the graffiti's cleaned up, what's the unsightly problem?
Well, it's 50 shades of green down there at the moment. It's just a new canvas for the next lot of graffiti. That's all that's happened. The paint must be partly stick by now.
All right. So, but just to try and, I mean, I'm trying to feed this into the broader sort of concern about vacant properties, and we've got an absolute ripper in Mitchell Park, which is probably worse. In fact, someone was commenting to Mr. Scull and myself just today about it. But can I ask staff what, beyond asking to clean up graffiti or sort of unsightly debris, what can be done to render that site more attractive, apart from a redevelopment, which obviously council can't compel? Can staff advise? I'll come back to you, Councillor. Anyone? Mr. Delacourne's going to take the chair.
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps if you just read up those questions like that.
All right. So the question is, the Scorpos site in particular, if the thing is cleaned up, it's not unsightly within the meaning of legislation, what can council do, what can council enforce to make it more attractive?
Through the chair, not a lot, and that's the summary of the response I've provided. Several assessments have been done over the years as to the nature, and the investigations have been done into the breadth of council powers in relation to the view of unsightly, and ultimately found that the graffiti is essentially the limit of council's efforts in deeming that property unsightly. It's not particularly damaged. There are elements that you may see there that are damaged, but it's quite orderly. There's no rubbish there on the times of inspection, or it gets cleaned up when the staff go out there and ask. So it's an approved use. It's that person's right for a property to have there, and yes, it's the response included, I guess, that conversation around what other strategic investigations we could do, and hence the inclusion of, I guess, a broader approach about council, how council might feel about incentivising other opportunities for the site to be beautified. And I think that would be an approach that would be more appropriate rather than legislative one at this time, given the extent of our powers.
I want to ask Councillor Duncan about her point, but I must say, in terms of that incentivisation, the thought that occurred to me through these motions was that there is always the possibility of a different rating regime for vacant commercial properties, which we don't have. Now, if that was, instead of, what is it, 185% or something for commercial, if that was 400%, you know, might be a bit of incentive. But anyway, Councillor Dunn.
I know that from my perspective, this site's been a bugbear for a lot of people in the area. I just wondered, you know, if they would take the petrol thingies out and take the overhang out, it would make it actually a lot more appealing and it will neaten it up. It's used as a car park every weekend, so why not make it a car park? And then it can be it look better than what it is. It's terrible. That's whether we've got the right to do it.
Not the right to, but Mr. Gilbert has the discussion with the owner included these sort of options.
It has, thank you, through the chair. And look, the car park use isn't an approved use in terms of the owner doesn't necessarily approve of it being used as a car park. That's somewhat ancillary to its primary use as a vacant site. Certainly, the conversations that the site has for time been touted for sale or been approached for use and has fallen through for various reasons.
I'm unsure whether any of those elements would remain of value to a new purchaser, and so perhaps that's why I remain.
And thank you for one of the classic plans comments of the year, that parking is ancillary to the use as a vacant site. I know what you mean.
Just one more question. Is the tanks and things that remain there at a risk to the community?
I'd have to take that on notice of the latest. I believe there has been some investigation through the chair as to that.
So that would be listed as a question on notice.
Is it contaminated site? Because if it is a contaminated site,
that's associated. So that'll be a question on notice. We'll get some more information about that.
There's a point of relevance to that. Like, service stations take years to clean up, and even if we did do the maybe dumping treatment and get rid of the pumps on the roof, there is years of venting and all that that would happen. And suddenly we could find it's 20 years without the site being used for anything.
Well, again, what we're grappling with is council's powers of enforcement, and that sounds like it's going way beyond.
What if I made an addition to my motion that we seek state government assistance in developing legislation to deal with these sites?
I don't think we would do that on the run. If you want to come back with a different proposal and give that a talk with staff, give that some thought, could be a winner. I don't know. Now, coming back to the council question.
You answered my question, it was about rating.
Right, well, that's certainly something to be considered. Councillor Lescu.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I've been aware of this site for quite a long time. I've had members of the community contact me, frustrated in regards to this site for a long time. I've also dealt with other sites where it's unsightly. And when I see the level of unsightliness that is required for any action to be taken, and that's based on precedent as well, it's more than I would like, but it's more than this site as well. So I think having a look at all the sites in our ward specifically, is a great way, because each local member would have that local knowledge about what is wrong and what the problems are, and also the working relationships with other people that staff have had with the owners, whether they've been cooperative or not, and why. I also think if we look at it as a broad approach, we can see what works and what doesn't, and why it doesn't work and why it does. I think that's important. But I guess in regards to this site as well, I think what we need to do is if any members are concerned about a site in the ward, that they do approach the local councillors for that ward first. I wasn't approached. My ward councillor, I've been advised, hasn't also been approached. This was brought to my attention through the media. And I think it's a wasted opportunity to actually work together on this issue, because, it's a valid concern. But I think the approach undermines this issue. And I think we really need to look at what we have in each of our wards. I know there's a site around the corner that's almost as bad. And I also go into other wards, and I see there's unsightly residential properties as well, and as well as commercial. So I think we need to look at some of those, especially residential properties owned by corporations as opposed to individuals.
We'll get you through. Councillor Prime.
Perhaps a solution to this is to have an exponential, but a growing multiplier on rates. So if a property sits dairy for a year, it tracks our standard commercial rate. If it sits dairy for 2 years, then it's maybe 1.5 times our standard commercial rate, or 2 times our standard commercial rate. If it sits dairy for 10 years, then it becomes quite an impost on someone who actually owns that property to do something about it, because we might ramp those rates up a factor of 5 or a factor of 10 after 10 years. So that would be a way around that part of the problem, I think.
Yes, imagine if that had applied to the Seacliff development, would be raking it in by now. But if the vacant underutilised sites motion is passed, it means that administration have to consider how owners might be encouraged to develop, and therefore that rates idea should be explored perhaps with Mr. Barnwell or whoever, and Councillor Lescu and Councillor Holm.
I think also we need to have a look at what can be counterproductive as well. So, we need to see if there's a certain amount of goodwill from the property owners, whether there can be exemptions, because we don't want to, for the sake of a few thousand dollars, actually undermine any positives that may be happening in that site, as well if there are legitimate reasons for properties not being developed. It could be to do with the know-how. It could be to do with health issues. So I think we need to take each site, have that little bit of discretion, just to make sure we don't get a perverse outcome in regards to any penalisation.
Making some good points in favour of the motion, but hopefully that'll mean you'll need less speaking time when we resume standing orders. Councillor Holt. Well, at the moment we're trying to look at these two motions together and see which is the preferred way forward. Councillor Holt.
I'm being contacted by residents from the ward. So what do I do? Mr. Kim Clayton?
Oh, well,
you should have written to both of you, so
that'll work. It's not, we don't really have to deal with this now, probably better in the Lincoln Miller Forum, but I suppose Councillor Lescu is suggesting a courtesy if you want to raise something to do with another that's in another person's ward to just inform them. But you don't have to, but
it's a little awkward, Mr. Mayor. Could I suggest also that this motion, for people that was on the previous council, would see that a very familiar motion? We've done this before.
Oh, the site's been there long.
No, this motion, we've done this before. And what was the result? There was no take-up. Isn't that why, Councillor Lescu? You've actually moved a similar motion before to this, and we supported it, and we went down that burrow, and we come up with no rabbits at all. The staff got nowhere with the troublesome sites around the city.
It would be worth dragging up a previous motion, but I think it's different.
Well, getting to debate.
It was only in the last four.
I'll resume the standing orders, and therefore, Councillor Lescu, you are moved.
Look, thank you, Your Worship. It's true, this motion was brought up before because it is an important one. We have got some action on some, but it's fallen off the radar. That's why this suggestion is improved, that all the sites are identified and kept tabs on in the council areas. So the people that have voted for us, they're the one, then the sites in their areas we look at. Now, it also allows us to take a slightly different approach. We can look at the utility of each site, and then when interacting with businesses and stakeholders, we have an offer to say, look, well, this site is actually unused, it could suit your purposes. Also, in regard to the legal costs, it's a bit of a contradiction to hear on one breath complaints about legal costs, but others about actually wasting that money. I think also, once we take a consistent approach, there isn't the defence of saying, oh, you're not applying consistency on council, if things do get taken to legal matters. However, I think it's misleading to tell the community that, or if the community gets the impression from what we say, that we can take more action than we can. And I think that as a responsibility we have as elected members is to make sure there isn't that confusion that preys on people's frustration on such issues. I think we need to also make sure that we're not counterproductive to ruin any goodwill. And on this issue, this site had an issue with noise with the garage. They were allowed to operate 24 hours, we thought, in the garage. And I questioned that, and I pushed and I pushed and I pushed. And in the end, the new manager, to his credit, found that there were actually restrictions going back decades ago. And they were applied. And they weren't appealed by the current owner on this site. So there have been reductions in the hours of operation and this reduction in the disruption. And that's the sort of thing that when you're working with a community and focusing on these issues over a while, you become aware of. So I think that's why focusing at the local level and looking at some of the suggestions we all have is important. Thank you.
Is that motion seconded? Yes, thank you. Any
Councillor Gard raised their hand before me, so because
you're not. No, are you seconding the motion?
Yes, I'm seconding the motion. Yes, Your Worship, I see the merits between the two motions which have been proposed, but I agree with the Councillor Valesco to take a broad approach rather than using it for one specific. Because if we go with the first motions which were put with the Councillor Hall, that means we identify another land and then we come back again. But I would rather use a broad approach, the administration take with the local board members and identify those sites and they can be discussed and work out strategies, how can we work with the landowners to develop them. That's why I'm in favor of the motion.
Thank you. Is anyone speaking against Councillor Crossland?
Look, I'm actually in favour of the overall thing, but the way this motion is worded, it's too vague. It's identify sites. I'm guessing it means unsightly sites, but it doesn't say it. Outlines, we want staff to outline an analysis on a vacant and unutilised site across the city of Marion. Just doing Halley Cove Shopping Centre is going to be a mammoth report for someone in staff to do. And I can think of several others just in coastal wards, so I can't support this motion on that basis.
I'm happy to take suggestions to improve the wording from Councillor Crossland.
Sorry, we've had the opportunity for sort of a committee effort, but we have to deal with it now. Are there any other speakers in favour of the motion? Councillor Prime.
Yeah, I have a question as well. I mean, it's along the same vein as Councillor Crossland. I mean, I have a very well known to myself and my co-councillor block down the road from.
Sorry, Councillor Prime, you're not speaking in favour of the motion.
I'm asking a question.
Okay.
There's a residential housing block that is definitely vacant and definitely underutilised. Does that classify this motion? We're going to go through and look at all the residential housing blocks.
Doesn't it specify commercial? So
no, it doesn't. So it's included, I'm guessing.
I'm happy to put commercial in there.
Councillor Gard, are you speaking in favour or against?
I am speaking for the motion. I do believe there's ways around this that probably we haven't explored. I, for example, would draw everyone's attention to the City of Adelaide proper and North Adelaide, which I think is all governed by the one council. And it strikes me that there's a very, very small percentage of properties that are really run down. I know there's quite a few, but a very small percentage. And that's the densest part of our commercial area. It amazes me that the councils are defenceless, as it were. It also amazes the bulk of residents. And I speak very much from experience with the Seacliff Park development site already mentioned. It is a joke, the site, and we make jokes of it, and it sticks out for that. But in all seriousness, it just goes on and on to the point that people become disconsolate. They're embarrassed by it. And I think once the residents get to the point of embarrassment of a place near where they live, that is very serious. And I can't see either the state or the Commonwealth being the slightest bit interested. So it is up to us to develop a way to solve this problem. We've been given more powers as far as public nuisance and the like concerned, and we're getting more and more powers across from state government. But I think in this one, we really have to get on the front foot and develop an approach, and we may have to go to the state and generate an agreement for all municipalities, because it really is past the point of no return. I, for example, fear that the Seacliff Park site could remain quite vacant for a very long time yet, particularly if
Councillor Gard, thank you. Thank you. Your time is up. Now, I had Councillor Shipp.
I'm wanting to move to defer both items to the next general council meeting, and staff bring a suggested alternate wording taking in tonight's comments.
Well, all you can, really only move that it be deferred.
Point of clarification, Your Worship.
Order. Hang on, I'm dealing with a procedural motion here. I think all you can do is move the procedural motion to defer.
Yep.
And obviously, informal discussions can take place between meetings.
For fuck's sake.
But you're moving the motion. Is that seconded, Councillor? Needs to be somebody who hasn't spoken in the debate.
Ask a question.
Councillor Mason. Procedural motion is dealt with immediately without debate or question, generally. So it's been moved and seconded. I will put the procedural motion putting these two matters off to the next general council meeting. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. So that is carried. Order about not voting. I'll ask the vote again. All those in favour of the deferral, please raise your hand. All those against, please raise your hand. The motion is carried, so we will deal with the motion for the next meeting. For point of order.
Point of order, Your Worship. I've been trying to put across that I was happy for the wording to be changed. I wasn't given that opportunity.
Councillor Gillespie, you can't amend your own motion, though. So it's unfortunate that some of those issues weren't canvassed when the matter, when the standing orders were suspended. But nonetheless, if the motion is put up that way, you kind of have to deal with it once we've already had lengthy discussion. But you can look on this as a blessing, because the wording can be refined and possibly gather more support before the next meeting.
Your Worship, I wanted to flag that I was open for people to amend it to something different so we could deal with the motion and move on. That was the reason why, and I wasn't... No.
Councillor Valescu, you should not argue with the chair when a ruling has been made on a point of order, please. Now we have questions on notice to note.
Can I ask Councillor a question about one of the questions?
Yes, in order.
Just in the parking permit situation, the residents followed up with another question. Can they actually come here to the admin centre to actually pay pick up that permit? There's no cost involved.
So the Westfield Marion Area Residential Parking Scheme, page 494, your question is whether the permit can be obtained from the council chambers.
If the resident can come here.
Can someone advise of staff? Councillor Crossland might be able to offer.
I just know that normally, because we have similar permit systems in the UK, council usually posts them to the address, because a lot of people try and renew them and they don't live there anymore. So they need to come to the council, pretend they still live there to renew them. So it's often why they're not available at council.
It sounds like that might be a question or notice.
Well, Councillor...
Order. Mr. Garidis, do you know, can you say?
No, we don't have a definitive answer.
Then that's a question on notice where those permits can be obtained. Done.
Yeah, can staff put contact and talk to me about this, because
it'll be a question on notice. No, you follow up with staff, that's the way it works. But it is taken as a question on notice, so it will appear at the next meeting in any case. We now have the confidential matters to deal with, so don't leave just yet. Well, we have to cover reports to deal with before we go into confidence. So, I suppose we might as well deal with them in order. So, on page 38, you've got a cover report.
Can we move the cover report on block? Is that possible?
Or yes, it is.
I'm happy to move the cover reports on block.
Three cover reports moved on block, so that for the Edwardstown Creative Industries, which involves a tender and certainly some confidential matters in those committee minutes. That's moved on block, seconded Councillor Pryor. All those in favour going into conference on those matters? All those against? Carried unanimously, I think. Have to allow for the delay in the transmission. So I'll just check with staff, because we have other members off site, whether we're set to go into a confidential meeting. Ms. McKenzie.
So just through the chair, just going to remove all anybody that is sitting as an attendee from the meeting, and then we'll lock the meeting and close the doors of interest for this one moment.